Hello, everyone. Dan Dillman here, bringing you a little of this, a little of that. Today's program is going to look at the slow decline of the retail industry. We're going to look at robocalls as well, and a few words about the strong stock market. Let's look at the first of these, the retail industry's slow decline. Retail growth hasn't kept pace with the improvement in employment and wages, and during 2017, it saw a steady stream of headlines about stores closing. So the question arises, how big is the retail industry? United States retail, excluding e-commerce giant Amazon, is worth about $2.5 trillion, The Economist magazine estimates. That includes both retail firms and their properties, as well as the investments of companies that support the industry, such as banks and insurance firms. Retail sales totaled about $5.5 trillion, according to the U.S. Department of Commerce. Retail growth has been pretty weak compared with the rest of the economy, and it hasn't kept pace with the improvement in employment and in wages. But traditional retail in particular, the kind that's centered around shopping malls, has been hit especially hard during 2017. So far this year, 5,300 retail locations have closed, according to one estimate. Sears has closed about 265 stores since last January, and it's operating about half the number of stores that it did in 2012. Macy's, Payless Shoe Source, Radio Shack, and others have shuttered multiple locations this year. Retail stocks, too, are in a free fall. In July, the Standard & Poor's 500 was up 14% from a year ago, but the exchange's retail ETF, that is, the exchange-traded fund, was down 10% in the same period. What's causing that? Increasingly, consumers are spending their money elsewhere. Living costs are higher. Industries that sell experiences rather than things, including restaurants, hotels, and airlines, are booming. And then there's Amazon. E-commerce made up over 5% of total retail sales at the beginning of 2012. That rose to 8.5% by the first quarter of last year. Amazon alone is responsible for nearly half that, accounting for 43% of total online retail sales as of February in 2017. Recently, Amazon has made plays into areas of retail that have been harder for the internet to crack, including groceries and clothing. Grocery stocks plunged when Amazon made a deal to buy Whole Foods for more than $13 billion. Also that month, the company unveiled Prime Wardrobe, a service now in beta that lets customers try on clothes at home and send back items they don't want. This is likely only the beginning. Amazon is going to continue to grow. And not only is the power and the reach of e-commerce widening and accelerating, but the impacts are beginning to hit home more deeply in more places. Just what does this mean for workers? Traditional retail is shedding jobs at a rate that dwarfs industries like coal and manufacturing, which get a lot more attention. Employment at department stores has declined 46% since 2001. In last June alone, the retail sector eliminated over 6,000 jobs. Over the next decade, between 6 million and 7.5 million retail jobs could be lost to automation. This is an estimate in a report released last spring by Cornerstone Capital Group. This all sounds bad. Why aren't we hearing more about it? Experts point to a few reasons. In contrast to manufacturing, in which a factory can close and leave hundreds of or thousands of people out of work in one fell swoop, retail tends to shed jobs in a slow trickle, a few dozen when a Sears store closes, maybe 15 when a Payless closes there. Additionally, a significant portion of the jobs lost are part-time and low-wage and were filled primarily by women and people of color. Coal mining is still 95% white and 95% male, according to the Atlantic Monthly. Department store workers are 40% minority and just 40% male. The emphasis on work that is white, male, and burly may represent an implicit bias against the working class of the modern service economy. Well, is there any good news about this? As traditional retail declines, jobs related to e-commerce are growing, and they tend to pay better. The question is to what extent they will be a replacement for the lost jobs. So far, they haven't been. According to the New York Times analysis of data from the Bureau of Labor Statistics, e-commerce has added about 178,000 jobs over the past 15 years, while traditional retail has shed 448,000. What's more, e-commerce jobs are more concentrated in a handful of metropolitan areas, whereas bricks and mortar retail is more evenly distributed. And now, let's dance with wolves for a few minutes before we have the next segment. Now, our second item of the day, the unending battle against robocalls. The Federal Communications Commission has proposed a new set of rules to stymie them. Calls from spoofed numbers have disturbed countless Americans at dinner time and deceived millions into turning over money or their personal information to scammers on the other end of the phone. What is a spoofed number? Scammers spoof another phone number when they use that number to hide their identity or the origin of their call. A spoofed number could be one a phone company has not yet assigned, a number from an invalid or non-existent area code, or a number from a line that does not dial out. Sometimes the call is made by an actual person, but usually it's an automated call. Robocall scams have been a pain in regulators' sides for a long time. But the proliferation of voice over internet protocol phones, which use a broadband internet connection to dial out instead of a traditional analog phone line, has enabled the number of robo-scams to explode. Complaints about robocalls violating the National Do Not Call Registry, an opt-in list that prohibits telemarketers from calling consumers, doubled between 2010 and 2015. Today, unwanted calls, including robocalls and telemarketing scams, are the number one consumer complaint to the Federal Communications Commission, with about 200,000 filed annually. These scams have also had economic consequences for Americans. Of the 13% of U.S. adults who have been victims of a telephone scam, nearly half of them have lost between $100 and $10,000. Well, just why have existing regulations not been effective? The simple answer is scammers ignore them, often because they illegally operate overseas or are otherwise out of law enforcement's reach. Spoofing is generally illegal in the United States, although Congress's Truth in Caller ID Act of 2009 does grant exceptions for political campaigns, charities, debt collectors, pharmacies, schools, and other providers of information. Additional federal measures targeting telemarketing abuse include the Telephone Consumer Protection Act of 1991, as well as the National Do Not Call Registry, which opened in 2003. The problem with these regulations is that scammers disregard them. Regulators have tried to put up other roadblocks, such as banning robocalls to cell phones without prior written consent, but spoofers have found their way around these too. Spoofers are often judgment-proof. The current laws just apply prohibitions to the spoofer, but you never know who they are, and you can't find them even when they are in the United States. Just what does the Federal Communications Commission plan to do? The Commission is proposing new rules and asking for help in a shift away from its long-standing policy of never allowing phone companies to block calls. The FCC is proposing allowing providers to do so if it appears the call originated from a number that is unassigned or invalid or is one a subscriber previously requested be blocked because of concerns that his or her number is being spoofed. But the FCC is also asking phone companies and the public to come up with ideas to ensure that legal telemarketers aren't also blocked. The commission is seeking public comments, and the final rules aren't likely to come into force until late this next year. What scams should people watch out for in the meantime? Rachel from Cardholder Services is just one color consumers should be wary of. She already has duped countless Americans by promising to lower their credit card bill. Another popular scam asks a question such as, "Can you hear me?" to trick people into saying yes. Don't. A one-word answer can be edited later on to make it sound as if the person authorized a major purchase. And finally, a third scam is a phony fundraising call, often from politicians, people whose voices have been used in the past include Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton. If you want to read more about this, you should look at the Christian Science Monitor of last spring, May 8th, in 2017. And now, as a interlude between our next subject, we're going to listen to a little Beethoven that you're probably familiar with. We begin this segment with a question. What are you reading? People often write the Christian Science Monitor and tell the authors what they're reading at the moment and what books that they recommend and what books they think you should also read because these people have enjoyed them so much. The first one is from Frank Cole, Crystal Lake, Illinois. He says, "I read Churchill's Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare by Giles Milton and could hardly put it down. My wife is currently reading it, and I've recommended it to several friends. It's very exciting and a real treasure for those of us who are interested in World War II. I can second Frank Cole's comments about this because I've read the book, read it this fall. And I couldn't put it down. I couldn't wait to read the next chapter in it. Well, number two on our list is from Louise Cox, Windsor Locks, Connecticut. And Louise says, I found Cattle Kingdom by Christopher Knowlton so exciting I couldn't put it down. See? Two in a row. It gives a seldom-told story of the open-range cattle era and its role in shaping America, the economic ties to Europe, and the deadliest winter on record, and what we are still learning about the wisdom of the Plains Indians as they practice conservation. It is a fascinating, fascinating, very fascinating book. And the third of the books that you should read, suggested by Marilyn Crowley from Harrison, Maine. Country Matters, it's called, a memoir by Michael Corda. It relates the funny and charming true adventures of two British-born, sophisticated New Yorkers who fall in love with a rambling Connecticut house that was built before George Washington was inaugurated. Margaret, an ardent writer, now has a place for her horse, and more horses, and more horses, and pigs, and cats. And Michael discovers it's harder to drive a tractor than he once thought. So, there are three books you should read. You will appreciate them very much, I'm sure. Time to enjoy a little Vivaldi of Four Seasons. Our last item of the day is the stock market. Just how strong is it? Since Trump's election, the S&P is up about 25%. In 2017, for the first time, the Dow Jones Industrial Average broke through 5 1,000-point milestones. 20,000 in January, all the way to 24,000 in November. Here are some questions to put the market boom in perspective. How does it compare to previous booms? This is the third strongest bull market since the crash of 1929. According to data from S&P Dow Jones Indices, as of mid-December, the Standard & Poor's 500 index was up just under 300% since the last bear market ended in 2009, behind only the boom of the 1990s. And the rebound from the Great Depression in the 1930s. Some analysts who date the 1990s boom differently argue that the current boom is a lot closer to taking the crown. What's behind the rise? After the markets plunged during the Great Recession, stocks were bound to recover. What has kept the boom going for more than 8 years, the second longest on record, trailing only that 1990s rise? Strong earnings, among other things. U.S. corporations notched a record $1.9 trillion of after-tax profits in the third quarter of 2017. The Federal Reserve has helped also by keeping the economy humming with ultra-low interest rates. The near-zero rates have buoyed the market in a second way, with savings accounts and bonds offering such paltry returns. Investors have little incentive to switch out of stocks. And now that I've told you a little bit about the stock market, we're going to have to leave you. We do hope you come back and listen again. Please tune in to a little of this, a little of that.